a certain overlap with the talk given by Magdalena, a student of mine in Madrid. But I guess there are some people who were not there. And there are some new facets about that. And it will be based also on a new paper done in my group in collaboration with Tim Ralph, who is sitting in the audience. So let me tell you first about motivation for our work. So we have these two theories, fundamental theories, modern physics, quantum mechanics, and general relativity. And there are many counterintuitive features in each of these two theories. Like, I pick up a few of them, like entanglement, single path interference, complementarity, relation, Bohr's rule on the side of quantum mechanics. On GR side, let's say gravity of space-time geometry, great insight, let's say, gravitational time dilation, Einstein's equations, frame dragging, and so on. Now looking at these two theories, we can say that each of these two theories has been tested to very high precision individually. So they passed the test. However, in all quantum mechanical experiments, if any gravity effects are seen at all, Newtonian gravity, the Newtonian limit, is sufficient to explain the phenomena. On the other hand, in GR, all GR experiments are consistent with classical mechanics. So somehow we have not tested the two theories jointly. What I mean is that we should be maybe interesting to look at the phenomena that indeed require both theories to be explained. In other words, if you leave out one of them, you can't explain the phenomena. I think this is simply important because we are missing these experiments, and we should be open-minded and be prepared maybe on some surprises. The second type of phenomena are indeed phenomena that you require a unified framework for both theories, and that's what our colleagues in quantum gravity are trying to do. In this talk, I will concentrate myself only on the first part, on the first type of effects, the effects that do not require unified framework, but require both theories to be explained and to be understood. So from the experimental point of view, I would say that these two types of effects have not been tested yet. So here's the outline of my talk. I already introduced the topic and motivation behind our research. I will start with two basic principles behind the two theories, like gravitation time dilation and quantum complementarity relation. And then I will introduce the interference of clocks as a kind of a tool set, actually, for testing the overlap between quantum mechanics and general relativity, and also for testing some alternative theories. And finally, I will conclude. So here are the two papers on which this talk is based. The first one, the first lead author of both of them is Magdalena Zich. She's a student of mine, as well as Fabio Costa Ingo-Pikowski. The second paper, you see that there are students as co-authors of this paper. That paper has been done in collaboration with Tim Ralph, and actually Tim was giving an initiative, really the idea about the second paper, asking why don't we do this actually with photons and contribute to this, the solution of the problem. So let me now introduce these two principles that I would like to join, to involve in a phenomena and look if there is any deviation, if we require both principles to be behind phenomena. So this is the quantum complementarity principle. Just briefly, let me repeat what I mean with this. You see the interference in an interferometer or double slit experiment if and only if you have no information whatsoever which path the particle took inside the interferometer. And you see interference. More precisely, it is not possible to simultaneously know the path of the particle and observe its interference. You can have one, but not both at the same time, and you can have also kind of a trade-off between these two maximally situations. Now, if you observe the path, you lose the interference. Moving towards the gravitational time dilation, we want to consider actually two clocks. These two clocks are initially synchronized, but placed at different gravitational potentials. If we do so, the clock that is closer to a massive body will tick slower than the clock further away from the mass. So we can, in short, say the gravitational time dilation is a fact where initially synchronized clocks will eventually show different times when placed at different gravitational potentials. Now I'm going to put these two principles at the same place, and I want to look at the phenomena actually that involves both of them. On one hand, the time shown by the clock depends on the path taken, and on the other hand, the interference cannot be observed if path can be known. And it seems very obvious that what one needs to really look at is interference of a clock. What I mean with the clock is that there is a certain degree of freedom that undergoes certain dynamics. And if I know these dynamics, I can look at these degrees of freedom and read out the clock. So I really mean in an operational sense. A clock is something that changes in time and can be compared with my clock on the wall in the laboratory and can be used to read out time. Now, what I want to discuss is a running clock in a superposition. This could be some internal degree of freedom, like spin precession of a neutron, or some Rabi oscillation. So I put a particle that has an internal degree of freedom that can serve as a clock in a superposition at two different positions in space in the gravitational potential. Now I'm going to explain intuitively what I should expect, and then we go into more detailed calculation of the fact. Actually, I should expect that there is no interference. And the reason is that the clock, the time of the clock, stores which path information. So at the end, on the observation screen, I can look at the clock and read out the time, and from time read out the path information, and correspondingly, I should lose interference. Furthermore, if I switch off the clock, putting, for example, the clock to be in energy eigenstate, such that there is nothing that can serve operationally as a clock, I should restore interference. So in short, if I put these two principles, they fit somewhat very nicely. Quantum complementarity plus time dilation gives a new phenomena in the interference of particles in gravitational potential, namely a drop in the interferometric visibility. Now I want to specify what I really want to test here. When I said at the beginning that we are interested in phenomena where both theories are required to explain the phenomena, one could object immediately, saying that atomic clocks are such systems. I need quantum mechanics, and they are used to measure time dilation. This is true. In order to understand the function of the clock, you need quantum mechanics. However, what in these all experiments so far, these atomic clocks are localized objects. So they are not put in the superposition of two spatial places in gravitational potential. What I would like to test here are clocks as quantum systems in sense that the degree of freedom that keeps track of time is in a quantum superposition of two different places. That is not the case for atomic clocks in the experiments performed thus far. So let's look at this intuitive idea more closely. I will consider mass and the interferometer in a gravitational field. So what we see here, there is Mach-Zehnder setup, the first beam splitter. The beam is split into the lower beam and upper beam, gamma 2 and gamma 1. Everything is in the gravitational field, pointing towards down to the lower path. The beams are recombined, and behind the second beam splitter, I have two detectors. In the middle, there is a phase shift that is supposed to be in control over an experiment. Delta H is the separation between the two paths. I consider homogeneous gravitational field. Now, what we will put is really a particle that can serve as a clock. As I said, a clock is a system with involving in time degree of freedom. Like if you put the neutron in a magnetic field, the spin precession, or if you have a Rabi oscillation for the two atomic levels. Now, without going into the tail yet of calculation, this is what I expect the state should be just before the second beam splitter. What you see is an entangled state between external and internal degrees of freedom. The first degree of freedom are modes associated with a path, for example, path gamma 1, and it's entangled with the state of a clock which followed path gamma 1, and similarly for path 2. The phases phi 1 and phi 2 are the phases that are picked up, gravitationally induced phases. I will explain all of them in more detail later. And phi, the last phi here, is the controllable phase. Now, if you look at the interference probability for obtaining a particle behind the second beam splitter, probability of detection will have this form. And what you can see that there is a phase which corresponds to the phase difference, gravitationally induced phase difference along the two paths, but also a modulation of the interference visibility, which is given by the overlap between two clock states. If the two clock states are orthogonal, we have no interference, because we can read out each path information just by reading the time. If they are indistinguishable, we have perfect interference. We can also introduce the distinguishability of the path, which is usually in quantum information defined as the probability to guess the path the particle took by measuring here clock degrees of freedom. And the two quantities add up as we expect, and quantum complementarity is satisfied. One has interferometric visibility that may drop, but just to the extent to which path information becomes available from reading out the clock. Now, this is just an intuitive picture of what we expect. Now, let us go into some more detail of a real experiment. We have a coupling of the clock to the gravitational field. We imagine that this Mach-Zehnder interferometer is put vertically oriented in the gravitational potential. What I use as a clock Hamiltonian is any Hamiltonian which, in the basis of comm-moving framework given by the Schrödinger equation, tau being proper time, moving in the left frame, we just have multiplication of the original Hamiltonian with the rate of difference of the proper time with respect to the laboratory time. So what finally we have is actually the sum of two parts of the Hamiltonian, one which is the external degree of freedom, like canonically quantized energy, and the other one is clock Hamiltonian. So the one is for the external and the other for internal degrees of freedom. So that will be the Hamiltonian of a system. We will consider clock to be put in the Schwarzschild metric, and we will use the limit of small velocities and weak fields, and actually all our effects will be 1 over c squared. I put here some of the second term as well, order, just for completeness. Now, taking this metric, we can calculate the rate for the proper time that we need to insert in the Hamiltonian. Once we do that, at the end of the road, we will see the Hamiltonian, which will have actually two parts, roughly, and I will explain both of them. The one is the kinetic part, rest mass, energy of the clock, and some GR corrections that are written here for the kinetic part, but that will not be relevant for our effect. So I'll put them for completeness, but I will not discuss them further. And second part is a potential part, where we have a coupling with a potential, gravitational potential, and also we have the rest mass term, corresponding to the rest mass, then the Hamiltonian of the clock, and some GR correction written here. Now, we will consider a somewhat simplified situation that will not screen our effect. Even if we have a complete discussion of the complete Hamiltonian, we will see our effect. However, the simplification helps us to somehow underline the effect that we are interested in. Namely, we will consider the situation in which the velocity along the horizontal paths are the same. Of course, if the particle just bounces from the beam splitter, it will lose kinetic energy. So in order to achieve this, you need to put some work. For example, you can trap a particle in some laser potential and move them upwards. So it's not impossible to do it experimentally. And even if we do not do it like that, we will have a somewhat longer calculation. But the fact that I'm interested in, which involves time dilation quantum complementarity, will remain. So for now, let me assume that velocity is the same, such that the kinetic part is not really important while calculating the phases, which we will do in the next slide. So the potential part will contain several terms. Some of them related to rest mass have been, and giving rise to the phase that I will introduce in the next slide, have been already observed. First in 75 by Sam Werner and co-workers in COW experiment with neutrons, and more recently in 99 with atoms in Holger Müller, Achim Peters, and Stephen Chu experiment. There are additional terms that have not been observed, like gravitation GR corrections, not yet been observed. And also there is a part that is particular for this proposal, namely Hamiltonian of the clock, which will give rise to time dilation. So now look at the results. If you use this Hamiltonian to evolve your state, you will obtain the following probability for detecting the particle behind the second beam splitter. First, we use the Hamiltonian for the clock, which will be just two-dimensional. So we imagine that there are two energy states, 0 and 1, and the state of the clock at the beginning is put in the superposition, such that we have some evolution of the clock. Now, here is the result. This is a long expression. I go through each of the terms. So first of all, some notation. Delta E is the difference in energy. Delta V is the difference in gravitational potential. Delta H is distance between the paths. And delta T is the time for which the particle travels in superposition at constant height. So you see that there is two cosines. One could be understood as a phase, the other as a modulation of the visibility. If we look at the phase, there are several contributions, I already noted. It's a relative phase from the Newtonian potential that has been observed in these two experiments, 75 and 99. Then there is some GR corrections to the relative phase from the path degrees of freedom, not yet observed. And there are two additional facts appearing only due to the fact that we use actually clocks. This is the phase shift proportional to the average internal energy, and there is a modulation of the interference visibility, a change in interferometric visibility. I will discuss this in a moment in more detail, what are actually the parameters to see this drop of the visibility. Now, let's look what we'll expect, what we expect to see in the experiment. The black curve is the curve that you would expect if the clock is switched off. That's mostly what people can see now with neutrons and atoms. The blue line is the phase shift introduced with an additional clock contribution when the clock is switched on. And the thick red line is modulation in the visibility. Neither of the two effects have been observed yet. Now it's a more, before going into discussion of the visibility, I would like to shortly comment on the interpretation of the experiment. And I would like to make a distinction between observing phase shift versus drop of visibility. Now, phase shift is something that has been observed in two experiments, but something which is explainable by a potential. All experiments so far actually test the potential, Newtonian potential, and in agreement with Newtonian limit of GI, the Newtonian gravitation. As such, they can be explained in the absolute time, in the time space that is flat. Even if you introduce GI corrections, but you don't use the clock, you will see somewhat different phase shift. But this phase shift could also be explained in a theory which is in a flat space-time with effective potential. So there cannot be anything about talking about redshift time dilation and similar if you think about measuring only phase shift. Another way to see this is that if you have a charge in an electromagnetic field, you will actually see the same phase shift. And there we do not use words like redshift, time dilation, etc., because we have known that we shouldn't do that, because electromagnetic force is not explained as a curvature of space-time. And finally, you see the phase shift independently of whether your particle is a clock or it is a rock. It doesn't need to be clock in an operational sense. However, drop in the visibility is not explainable without understanding gravity as a metric theory. The clocks really tick differently, showing that the proper time flows at different rates. So this is exactly time dilation. It's a consequence of the curved space-time, and it's there if and only if particle is well-defined clock in the operational sense. One could object on this interpretation, saying that entire GR can be understood as a theory in the flat space with effective, albeit very complicated, potential. Yes, this is true. However, the very fact will be that every energy will couple to such gravity. And if every energy couples to gravity, we have a word for that. We say there is a time dilation. We think about it as actually a curved space-time. It's easier to understand this theory that way. And so I will keep this time dilation on the right-hand side for drop in the visibility, but not for the left-hand side for the phase shift. So let me think what kind, so far I tried to argue that these experiments are interesting if you want to test the interplay between GR and quantum mechanics. But now I can also think of some alternative theories that are still in agreement with experiments so far and are not GR plus QM. So what would be, from the phenomenological point of view, such an alternative theory? Now imagine that you switch off a clock in the superposition, and you look and you see that there is no interference. So there are some proposals that one should consider proper time as an additional quantum degree of freedom. So in a sense, the particle would have some internal clock. Even if it is not operationally well defined, there is something which ticks. It is sometimes related to the supposed commutation relation between proper time and mass when they are considered as quantum mechanical observables. Now, I could say that this theory, in one extreme case, is already disproved. Namely, if you think that there is some cat related to the proper time operator, and it's well defined at the beginning of your experiment, so it's in a sharp value, and then you go with our experiments, the two cats will evolve into distinguishable orthogonal states, and therefore, if you want to consider this as a quantum degree of freedom, and you want to preserve quantum complementarity relation, you will see that there is no interference. You will need to see that there is no interference because you can read out, or not you can read, but something, somewhere it's written down the information of the path. However, in the experiments so far, we do see interference. So at least in this extreme case, this idea is disproved. I will go back to this once more, thinking about what happens if the initial state is not well defined. Proper time. There is another possibility, which kind of opposite of this. You have a running clock in the superposition, but at the end, interference can be observed. So somehow, quantum complementarity principle will be violated in presence of GR. Let me give you a more specific example of that, which is not even that strange. Imagine, and this is again our Hamiltonian from the beginning, that the gravity actually couples to the mean energy of the clock. So not to the clock as a quantum mechanical observable, but just to the mean energy. This will be a nonlinear theory, kind of a semi-classical theory. What you will see then, that even if you start your clock in a superposition, so you have an operation well-defined clock, at the end, you see interference that is perfect because you see only the phase shift that is now proportional to a rest mass part and to the mean energy. Thus, you don't have any drop of the visibility. So this will be kind of a semi-classical nonlinear theory, probably with all possible problems that we know from nonlinear theories. Where gravity couples to the mean clock energy. And in a sense, this will be a violation of quantum complementarity in agreement in GR, because indeed there is something, there is something that should keep track of time, however we see the interference at the beginning perfectly. Now here is the list of all these alternative theories that you can think of. On the left-hand side, you see what will be. Imagine that the experimental visibility observed is, for example, zero. A possible explanation would be that the proper time is really quantum degree of freedom, is sharply defined, but this is already disproved. That's the first alternative theory that I have been introduced. You can have something where the measured visibility is less than what predict quantum mechanics, which means perhaps that proper time quantum degree of freedom at the beginning has certain uncertainty such that the accumulated time dilation is not large enough, but is within the uncertainty of the state at the beginning. Of course, you can have something where you match a quantum mechanical description That's something that everybody would expect. Or even that measured visibility is larger when you have quantum mechanical, okay? Like in the later case where you have perfect visibility even with the clock switched on because gravity couples to the mean energy. Now look at the implementations of these all effects. That is expression for our visibility, where this is the difference in energies for the clock, and this is the space time surface of the interferometer. Remember, that was the time flight of the particle along the horizontal path, and that was the difference in potential, so the difference of height. Here are some numbers from the best towards the worst. If we take the hyperfine states for the clocks and take the frequency to be to 10 to the 15 hertz, what we have achieved so far in experiments for the space-time surface of the interferometer is 10 to minus 5 and require 10. So you need, this is not millisecond, this is meter times second. So we have a few orders of magnitude. There are people thinking how one can avoid this, how one can get some better numbers. So again, this is the clock frequency. This is previously used interferometers testing gravitational phase shifts. And this is what we need for the full loss of the interference. Maybe a partial loss will be already enough. Now let me move to something slightly different. The idea is still the same. Test the interplay between quantum mechanics and GR, but change the system under investigation. So far, we considered a kind of a periodic clock. There is some internal degree of freedom, and the visibility, when you look at it more closely, was given just by the ratio between accumulated time dilation and so-called orthogonalization time, time in the state needs to get into the orthogonal one. Now, we can think about non-periodic clocks as well. What about taking the position of a particle that has a well-defined velocity, and then if it has a well-defined velocity, the position will tell us what the time is. So think about some Gaussian wave packet and look at external degree of freedom. So then, of course, we do not have orthogonal states. Orthogonization time will be different, but we can operationally define this. We can agree that we define the two Gaussians to be distinguishable if the overlap is not larger than 1 over e, for example. Then the orthogonization time is actually related to the square root of the width of the wave packet. And this was actually initial idea of Tim Ralph. Look at these non-periodic clocks and look at photons. So what we looked is indeed everything what I have said so far. The notation is slightly different because it's a different paper. You cannot somehow synchronize on notation. But so you have the horizontal length, which is x, delta h is still the height difference, and the length of the horizontal path is l. Now, again, what we assume is we have a well-defined wave packet at the beginning. It splits, and the packet, wave packet that is actually closer to the mass travels slower as compared to the one in the upper path. And this is well-known Shapiro delay, the delay of the light in the presence of large masses that has been seen for classical light, classical waves in a sense. What we want to do here is to do the similar thing with single photons to be truly quantum mechanical. Again, it's Schwarzschild metric assumed. What we start with is, of course, the trajectory, right, like trajectory of the photon. And out of this condition, plugging into the our expression for the metric, one can compute the time that particle spends along the horizontal trajectory at the radial distance r as seen from a distant observer. So it's just integrating this expression. What is actually what we are interested in, not in that time for the distant observer, but if you want to compute the probabilities for the detectors that are within the potential, we need actually what is the difference in photon arrival times for the local observer at the upper path, because that's the place where the detectors are. So we take the difference for the distant observer between two times and multiply by this factor to get exactly the arrival time difference at the detectors. This is a product between LG H, H is the difference between two highs, over C to the power of 3. And now you can build up a really a photon through the wave packet, which has integration of a different frequency, mu, and there is two contributions coming into one or the other photon, the two contributions from the wave parts of the wave packet coming from the upper and lower path. At the end, you square this, you get probabilities, and this is your expression. Now, in order to see something more physically, you look at the Gaussian wave packets that are centered around some frequency mu zero and has some distribution sigma. And what you obtain is this expression. So you have a phase shift and you have a drop of the visibility. Now the phase shift is interesting, is given and is predominant in the case where the time coherence is much larger that the time dilation accumulated, such that basically the two wave packets overlap, and you see only phase shift. But even that phase shift, which would be the analog of COW experiment for photons, is very interesting. And that's why? Because you can get this phase shift by taking the COW phase shift to a massive particle and introduce the effective length and plug into the phase shift, and you get the same phase shift as we calculate here. Not only the phase shift, but it also involves an indice test of mass energy equivalence. However, in the spirit of this work, we are also interested in another extreme that becomes very important once the temporal coherence of the photon is of the order of the accumulated time dilation. Because then you see the time, the visibility drop, which is an exponential drop. And again, the ratio between time dilation accumulated and autocolonization time is important. So here are the numbers, and I'm very close to finalizing my talk. Here are the numbers that are, in cases of phase shift, much more encouraging. Let me take the phase shift. If we pick up the photon frequency of 10 to 15, then measuring the radians of 10 to minus 6 radians, you can have the geometrical surface of the interferometer 10 to minus 4 kilometers squared, which is not that bad. If you want to see the time dilation, the results are slightly we compare here the systems. So you remember that when we look at atoms and hyperfine states, even with an autocolonization time of 10 to the minus 15 seconds, if you are able to measure this, the surface of the interferometer is 10 to the minus 7 square kilometers. However, for photons, with the same precision of the organization time, it's 10 to the power 3 square kilometers. So it seems that at least drop the visibility is really much, much more hard to see. However, this again shows a kind of fitting between these two theories, between GAR and quantum mechanics, simply because you can reinterpret these experiments in the following way. There is a visibility drop just because one can, again, find out which path information by measuring the arrival time of the photons behind the second beam splitter. Of course, this kind is more trivial because the external degree of freedom are responsible for the interference, and they are also responsible for providing which path information and beam clock. So I'm coming to the summary. What I try to argue that it's important to probe also the overlap between quantum mechanics and general relativity beyond what has been done so far. Interference of clock can provide a witness, actually, of general relativistic time dilation in quantum mechanics. It's really that the effect is there just due to the time dilation. We consider two kinds of clocks. One is internal degree of freedom of massive particle, and the other is external degree of freedom of photon. And we also show how one can test some alternative theories that will not match to the joint prediction of quantum mechanics and GR. And finally, it seems that COW for photon effect, the phase shift of photon, is within the reach of current technology, and it has a nice add-on with respect to the massive particle that at the same time you probe mass energy equivalence. So this is my group. As I mentioned, Tim Rath is also collaborating. Second paper, this is our first author, Magdalena Zich. On the papers are also Fabio Costa and Igor Pikowski. So with this, I would like to end, and thank you for your attention.